Thanks, Greg. Yes, we have caught up with David Kim. David, that was amazing. Such a vivid array of emotions. Bravo.
Thank you, Susan. It's somebody asked the great pianist Emmanuel Ax once, like kind of as he was walking back to the hotel after a concert, like kind of, why do we put ourselves through all of this stress and hard work and all of this? And he said, well, because we feel slightly less lousy afterwards than we did before. But I have to say, it's actually, I feel exhilarated and so relieved and happy that it went well.
Well, this piece, I think you've said it's both virtuosic and accessible. When did you first experience this piece? When did you first play it?
I think I was about 10 or 11 years old. It is considered one of the concertos that a young violinist will start with after the kind of student concertos, some of them like DiBerio and Accolai and Viotti. Then you'll move up to the kind of big boy concertos like Mendelssohn, Saint-Saëns, B minor, and the Bruch Violin Concerto.
Well, and I have heard it described as a great concerto to introduce people to classical music.
Oh, absolutely. As I mentioned, it's one of the most accessible and very, very kind of joyful pieces. And there's no mystery in it, like, oh, well, what's the architecture? What's the language here? It's just very, very accessible.
So how do you approach it?
Well, on two levels. One is on an artistic level, I try not to get too esoteric or too sophisticated with it. I just try to play from my heart. The music speaks very easily. I play it a lot with a lot of orchestras of different levels, student orchestras, youth orchestras, all the way up to professional orchestras like the Philadelphia Orchestra. And then on a physical level, perhaps stamina is a word that I think of with the Bruch Concerto. I find that the way it is designed, the first movement's quite short, and then the second movement is longer and more involved. And then the third movement is the longest, and it has the most physically taxing challenges within the piece itself, the entire piece. So I try to mentally prepare. You have to kind of gird yourself and maintain and increase your energy level as you go into the second and third movements.
Well, you're remarkably composed considering you just played it.
Playing with the Philadelphia Orchestra, and I don't think I just speak for myself. I think I speak for anybody, whether they're a young soloist, a member of my orchestra, a colleague, or up to the most famous soloists on today's concert stages. When you play with an orchestra like the Philadelphia Orchestra, you kind of have to have your entire life revolve around the ramp up to that experience, psychologically, physically, in terms of preparation, in terms of playthroughs with other orchestras, and then in the weeks and days leading up, whatever your physical kind of routines may be. For me, it's holistic. I'm trying to design my entire eating schedule, sleeping schedule, exercise. Mentally, I'm doing a lot of pre-concert visualization. And I try to create as many non-surprises as possible within my psyche before the concert.
Wow. Well, you say you've played this concerto many times. Are there certain parts that you go back to in your mind? I know there are three cadenzas in the first movement. Are there certain parts that you play with this time?
Yes, absolutely. One of the places that I certainly am thinking of in my head as I'm preparing is the very opening, which is in G minor. Obviously, Max Bruch chose a dark key, and he opens the concerto with the lowest note on the violin, an open G string. That's our lowest string. It's the thickest. It creates the lowest tone. Another place I'm thinking of is the closing of the slow movement, the second movement. There is a place where he gives a fermata, which means, or some people call it a bird's eye, which means the rhythm just stops and the orchestra kind of cuts out. It's kind of a quiet, intimate moment for the soloist. For me, that's a very special time and a great moment to have this kind of private conversation with my colleagues on stage.
Do you get caught up in the emotions of it while you're playing? Because I know it's technically demanding and emotionally demanding.
I remember as a child, my mother, who was a pianist and who started me on the violin and pushed me, the original Tiger Mom, I remember her playing a recording of a famous woman singer named Lotte Lehmann, and how I think it might have been a Schubert Lieder or something, or Schumann song, and at the end she falters. You know, it's kind of a crackling, popping LP, and she's singing, and at the end she falters and she weeps a little bit. And my mom just thought that was so amazing. But there's that kind of fine balance that we are all trying to maintain on stage of maintaining kind of objective, being an athlete a little bit, as it were, and making sure that we do certain things to ensure success. But then also to have a certain amount of release and to have a kind of a, at the moment, freedom of musical and artistic speaking and singing. So it's kind of making sure that we don't go overboard and, you know, kind of become so reckless that it becomes sloppy. So I think that in itself perhaps saves us from ourselves, because there are moments when it is so emotional, and that's a wonderful moment when it happens. But I think, at least for me, I try not to get to that point.
Well, you do so many things. This is your 21st anniversary as concertmaster of the Philadelphia Orchestra.
It is, Susan. And 21 years is, many of those years have gone by like a flash.
Can you share with us how you do this all and what you're most excited about at the moment?
I have to say that, of course, all of these wonderful things, there's not one thing, Susan, that I consider less exciting or less fulfilling or meaningful. Something that I do, which is I play recitals at all the retirement communities in our area, all the way down to Delaware, over through New Jersey, way out under the main line. I play probably about over 20 concerts, some chamber music with my colleagues from the Philadelphia Orchestra that I organize. But many of those, at least 15, 17 a year, are playing at places like Beaumont of Bryn Mawr, or Waverly Heights in Gladwin, or The Hill at White Marsh, or the Evergreens in Morristown, New Jersey. You know, I could just go on and on. And all of these wonderful audience members are like second parents to me.
It sounds great. It's an example of how music creates community in the best sense of the word.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, David Kim.
Always a pleasure, Susan. Thank you.